too. This is Fresh Air. My guest Anne Stingle just returned from 7 days in Somalia touring Red Cross feeding centers. Stingle is a spokesperson for the American Red Cross. The International Red Cross is the leading aid agency in Somalia. We spoke with Stingle just before she left for Somalia and asked her to check back with us when she returned home. Things had changed since her previous trip to Somalia last May. This is one of the images that now haunts her.
I was standing in the middle of a feeding center in Baidoa, and I remembered that one of the images that struck me most when I was in Somalia before was the image of women trying to nurse their children, doing it out of sheer instinct, even though they were so hungry themselves they had nothing left to give, and being very touched by that image. And I was standing in the middle of a feeding center in Baidoa, and I was looking, I had just stopped for a minute and was looking around saying, something's missing here, something's not right. And then I noticed that it was that image I wasn't seeing. There were no nursing mothers. And suddenly it hit me like a thunderbolt. There are no children in Baidoa. It was as if a Pied Piper had come in and taken them all away. Under the age of 4 to 5, there are no small children in Baidoa. And they became very, very noticeable and conspicuous in their absence once you realize that they were gone. It was something I knew intellectually, but until I faced a town that has no children, no small children, it was just very, very powerful for me. You do see older children, 4 and 5 and older, but of the younger ones, they're simply not there. They're dead.
What are some of the other images that really stay with you?
Once we went into a field hospital where the ICRC had sent in a surgical team, and there had been some, there was a feeding center that the night before, and this is an emergency feeding center where they were taking care of the severely malnourished, you know, the skeletal emaciated people, and some looters had gone into the feeding center and had shot it up for just a few bags of grain and left 5 of these people who were starving to death in the first place, had shot them. And they were laying there. And, you know, it's just tragedy upon tragedy. You know, how can this happen to someone who's dying of starvation to begin with?
Now, I believe you arrived in Somalia at just about the time that the troops were starting to leave Mogadishu for other parts of Somalia. Did you see things gradually change as you were there?
It takes a while for food and nutritional status of people to change. That just is a matter of time. You could see a visible difference in security. One of the things that became a rather predictable phenomenon was that when word went out that the military would be moving into an area, that area would become very unstable and very insecure because the gunmen that were there would become really agitated and seeing the end of their own power, at least in that particular place, and move on. But for a time being, it would become, that particular town would become very unstable.
It was recently announced that the Green Line has been dismantled and that kind of separated the north and the south of Somalia, each part controlled by a different warlord. But now that area is supposed to be just totally in rubble. Can you describe what it was like to cross the Green Line, which still existed when you were in Somalia?
Mogadishu itself is in rubble. Just trying to get around Mogadishu, how do you go find a compound where someone is staying? Because there are no landmarks. You can't go use any building as a landmark because it's just in such rubble. There are no street signs, nothing. I mean, the whole city is just destroyed. And so certainly along the Green Line, it was that way as well. Where we crossed was not in the dead center of town. But it was a place that people were quite agitated. Our drivers were very nervous about being there. And we had to wait. You couldn't take your vehicle across the green line. You had to get out of your vehicle and get into another one on the other side. And the drivers that had taken us to the green line and had to wait for the other one to pick us up were starting to get very, very nervous sitting there for a while. I guess I was uninformed enough not to know that I should have been nervous. But, you know, in retrospect, I can see that they were very, very upset at having to be there waiting for the other car.
So the last time you were there, you had security. What the policy of the Red Cross, I know, for food shipments is not to use armed security. What's the policy for people who are traveling like yourself?
Well, even the ICRC was forced in the time of this terrible period that Somalia is coming, we hope, is coming out of. They had to have a security team with their delegates wherever they went. At least we had one with us, and maybe perhaps it was me being someone other than ICRC, but there was usually a technical team. They had had several delegates shot, so it became necessary. Now, they would not allow them in the same car as whatever vehicle it was that had the Red Cross emblem could not have any weapons in it. And so they had their security team drive behind.
But this time around, you didn't have security.
No, uh-uh. Uh-uh.
Did you feel safe without it?
Yes, I did. I felt, like I said, the tension had eased. Now, it was starting to pick back up a little bit. Either that, or I was becoming more aware of the fact that there was still tension in the city. I did start seeing more guns, guns that were more visible. And as you've heard on some of the reports, that there has been some of the Somalis have fired on Marines and on installations. And there was some sense that attempts to do that would start picking back up. It is a tense city because you have an entire population of people that have no employment. They have nothing to do during the day. They're restless. They're agitated. They're really burned out by the situation. And it's even without the guns, you get the impression that it's people are very restless with it, and that this euphoria can't go on.
My guest is Anne Stingle, spokesperson for the American Red Cross. She just returned from Somalia. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Anne Stingle of the American Red Cross. You've told us that the presence of the military has created a safer atmosphere in Somalia. How much physical evidence of the military did you see? Did you run into troops wherever you went?
Yes. Well, of course, in Mogadishu, it was... Mogadishu Airport was becoming like O'Hare with the amount of flights coming in, bringing in logistics and bringing in troops. Very, very different from the Gulf War, where you had a base location that had a power supply, it had water. There were certain human service systems already in place in Saudi Arabia, and you had a six-month time for them to build up. All of this had to happen from the ground up in Somalia. There was no water source. There was no latrines. There was no communication. There's no electricity, nothing. They had to bring in, as I left, they were quite proud of the fact that they now have two enclosed latrines in Mogadishu. And out of, with that many troops, you start to get a picture of how the military is having to deal with nothing and to build from nothing.
What were medical conditions like at the Red Cross centers that you visited? What are the medical issues now that the Red Cross workers are facing, and how do you hope that the military will be able to help?
Yeah, the in terms of the medical condition, and especially as it relates to malnutrition, the emergency phase is not over. If those kitchens, and the Red Cross has 900 kitchens around Somalia, if those kitchens stopped, people would starve to death. In terms of, yes, things are getting better because the food is flowing to those kitchens, but those kitchens remain absolutely necessary, or we go back to square one.
What's it like around the holidays in Somalia now? Well, like at the Red Cross centers, do people do anything for, you know, in recognition of Christmas or Hanukkah or New Year's? Were there signs of that when you were around?
No, there wasn't. Not in Somalia itself. It was like stepping into another world. Christmas just didn't exist. I understand that I had come home, of course, for Christmas and saw on television that the military singing Christmas carols, mm-hmm. and so forth. But in terms of the workers themselves, there was no real sign of Christmas. I know there were a couple of them that were trying to get in touch with friends who were with other delegations or in other locations because they said Christmas is a time for that. But there were no decorations, no real sign out of it. And it was kind of like, okay, it's better that we just not, you know, dwell on that too much. Let's just keep on going with the task at hand.
And this gets back to what you were saying before about how in any car with a Red Cross emblem, there can't be any guns.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't there be guns in a Red Cross vehicle? What is the philosophy of the Red Cross and weapons?
Well, if the Red Cross, because it works in areas of armed conflict, the International Committee of the Red Cross works only in areas of armed conflict, and it must be seen by all sides as neutral, as non-participatory in the conflict. If you have weapons with you, you must be using them for one side or the other. It carries too many implications. Generally, the ICRC is only armed with its copy of the Geneva Conventions, and that's the mandate under which it works. That's its only weapon. So to have arms on a truck, just it's too easy to be interpreted by one side or the other as indicating a preference or a political position. Now, in the case of Somalia, you had anarchy, and so the sides were much less, much more foggy and blurred in terms of sides. And then when so many were shot, it became necessary to have security with them and security protection. But this is unique and extremely unusual.
Did there used to be more international recognition and respect for the Red Cross than now? In other words, I mean, the warring parties, did they respect the neutrality of the Red Cross more than it's respected now? Are wars and feuds now just less ready to recognize the neutrality of anybody?
Well, Somalia, you have to remember, is unique in the element of anarchy. And the people, most of the people with the guns, many of the people with the guns were teenagers that didn't know a Red Cross or a Red Crescent from anything else. Mm-hmm. It meant virtually nothing to them, and nothing was sacred to them. If they'll shoot up a feeding center, they'll shoot anything. So that you're dealing with a group of people that it's different than dealing with warring parties where you have, you know, sides and you have a military force.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. exactly, and rules to follow.
But, you know, it looks like anarchy might be the kind of war of the future, of the near future. Do you think that the Red Cross will need to change in any fundamental way in order to provide services in these in the kinds of wars that we're seeing now?
That's an excellent question. And it's one that has occurred to a lot of people. Are we seeing what can happen in the future? If you look at Bosnia and how that seems to be fragmenting down to its lowest common denominator, as Somalia did. If you look at Liberia, those are we looking at something that we're going to see more of? And yes, the Red Cross may have to adjust its role somewhat. I think how the international community treats anarchy is going to be something that needs to be addressed. It is something that will probably face everyone, as Somalia has.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Anne Stingle is a spokesperson for the American Red Cross.